Welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. I'm Rachel Isaacs, a student from Manalapan, New Jersey, and the engineer for this program. We look forward to learning some Torah with you today. Thank you for tuning in. Today we are joined by Rabbi Meir Schweiger, a faculty member in the Mashkiach Ruchani at Pardes. He will be teaching us about Parshat Mishpatim. A few quick announcements, and then we'll hand it over to Rabbi Schweiger. Do you have a vision for the Jewish future? Have you considered a career in Jewish education? The Pardes Educators Program includes 2 years of subsidized study and living in Jerusalem, leading to an MA degree in Jewish education. Graduates teach Judaic studies in day schools in North America. For more information, see the Pardes website at www.pardes.org.il. Your participation and feedback is vital for the success of the podcast series. Please send us comments on the episode, where you live, and how you heard about us. Send your email to podcast@pardesusa.org. Thank you. That's it, and now Rabbi Schweiger.
Thank you, Rachel. It's a beautiful day today in Jerusalem. I want to begin the shiur by saying that over the past few weeks, I've received a number of comments, feedback on the shiurim. I thank all the people who've sent their comments, people who have sent some constructive criticism. I welcome your suggestions. And anybody who has not sent in any feedback, I am very happy to receive your feedback, and where possible, I will be very happy to respond. This week's parsha is Parshat Mishpatim. The parsha begins by saying, Ela ha-mishpatim asher tasim lefnehem. These are the laws that you should place before them. The word mishpatim is generally associated with what we would call social laws. And in fact, this week's parsha is primarily concerned with many of the day-to-day social laws that occupy people's lives. I would like to focus on the opening verses, which have to do with the Hebrew slave. There are three sections in the Torah which deal with the Hebrew slave, Eved Ivri. The first section is the beginning of our parsha, Shmot, chapter 21, verses 2 through 6. The second section is from Leviticus, Vayikra, chapter 25, verses 35 through 43. And the third section is in Deuteronomy, chapter 15, verses 7 through 18. The two primary sections are the ones in our parsha and in Leviticus, in Vayikra. And I would like to start perhaps with the section which is in Vayikra and then work back to our section. And I would like to also say that most of the rabbinic commentary which I will be referring to, you can find in Rashi's commentary, both in our section and in the above-mentioned section in Vayikra. In Vayikra, chapter 25, sentence 39, it says, V'chi yamuch achicha imach, if your brother shall be poor with you, v'nim karlach, and he will be sold to you, lo ta'avod bo avodat aved. Do not work him the work of a servant. Sentence, verse 40. Kisachir kitoshav yiyeh imach. As a hired worker, as a resident, he shall be with you. At shnat hayovel yavod imach. Until the jubilee, he will work with you. V'yatza ima imach, and he will go out. Hu uvanav imo, he and his children with him. V'shavel mishpachto, he will return to his family, ve'al achuzat avotav yashuv, and he will return to the land of his fathers, the inheritance of his fathers. Ki avadayhem, because they're my servants. Asher otzeti otam eretz Mitzrayim, that I took out of Egypt, lo yimachru mimkeret aved. They shall not be sold the way a slave is sold. Lo tirdevo befarech v'yareta me'elkecha. Do not rule over him harshly, and you should fear your God. Let me point out a number of key points in this section. First, the section is talking about one type of Hebrew slave. That is the Hebrew slave who sells himself due to poverty. If you look at the previous verses in that section, in verse 35, if you look even before that, you'll see that selling oneself is a last resort. If someone is impoverished, it seems that perhaps the first recourse is to sell your possessions, perhaps to sell your land, as a way of somehow putting yourself back on track financially. If that doesn't work, in verse 35, we're told, if someone is poor, strengthen him. How? In the next verse, it says, do not take from him interest, which would imply the way to strengthen him is to give him a loan. But what if selling one's possessions, what if taking out a loan is not enough to make me financially stable? It seems that verse 39 is allowing for the possibility of someone who sells himself to be a slave to overcome his financial difficulties. And the Torah is very insistent. In no way should this person be treated as a slave. The first thing which it says in verse 39 is, Lo ta'avod bo avodat aved. Do not work him as a slave. And Rashi brings the rabbinic understanding, which, by the way, for those who want to check this out, you could look at Masechet Kiddushin from Daf Yud Dalet, page 14, 15, 16. Rashi comments, what does it mean to say, do not work him the work of a slave? Do not give him work which is degrading, so that it's discernible that he's a slave. Do not have him carry your towel to the bathhouse. Do not have him put on your shoes. That is considered to be the work of a slave. Work which we would see as being demeaning. Subsequently, in verse 42, it says, Lo yimachru mimkeret aved. When he is sold, do not sell him as a slave. And once again, Rashi comments. That means by announcement, here is a slave to be sold. Don't put him on a selling block and treat him as a piece of property. And then in verse 43, do not rule over him harshly. And Rashi says, what does that mean? Do not give him unnecessary work in order to afflict him. Do not say, warm up this cup for me when you don't need it. Hoe under this vine until I return. It's important to emphasize avodat parech, which is usually understood as being harsh labor, is not necessarily difficult physical labor. The idea of avodat parech is labor which is trying to emphasize, I am the master, you are the servant. It could be labor which is totally useless, where the only reason to do it is because I, the master, told you to do it. And the Torah is saying, do not do that. which means the Torah is very emphatic. In no way should you treat this person as a slave. And if I go back to verse 40, it says, Kisachir, kitoshav yiyeh imach. He shall be with you as a worker, as a hired worker, what we would call an employee. As a resident, he shall be with you. And Rashi says, what does that mean? The work that he does should be working the land, crafts. Treat him the way you would treat other skilled laborers, or perhaps even unskilled laborers, but people who are doing a job, who are not slaves. One last point which is emphasized here is that it is important that this person go out during the Jubilee year. This is to emphasize the very fact that he is to go out at a certain deadline is to make it clear he's not there for life. And perhaps this is something which is characteristic of a slave. A slave is somebody who is with you forever, who once he's your slave, he has given up his autonomy. The Torah wants to emphasize the situation that you are in now is a temporary situation. And let's just go back a second. If we're speaking about somebody who sold himself due to economic difficulties, what the Torah wants is to find a mechanism to help this person get back on his feet. The Torah is not interested in having this becoming a permanent state. When a person comes to the point where he has to sell himself, he has dropped to a certain abyss in terms of his human dignity. He has reached a very real low in terms of his self-image. And therefore, the Torah wants to create these safeguards to not push him over the brink. As much as we are willing to acknowledge his state, we want to then try to get him back on his feet. And therefore, the Torah says, in no way treat him as a slave. He is a worker. He is somebody who's there temporarily. Impress that point upon him so that ultimately he will become a financially independent individual. Perhaps one last thing which should be pointed out. In verse 40, when it says, as a worker, as a resident, he shall be with you. The Talmud in Masechet Kiddushin derives from that, and Maimonides brings this in his Mishneh Torah, and if anyone is interested in looking this up for further scrutiny, you can find this in the Mishneh Torah, Hilchot Avadim, the Laws of Slaves, chapter 1, Halachot 5 through 9. And the specific thing which I'm about to refer to is Halacha 9. And that is, because it says, he shall be with you, the rabbis derived, the owner is obligated to treat his Hebrew servant in a manner equal to him with regard to food, drink, clothing, and lodging. Whatever food the master eats, the servant, the Hebrew slave, has to eat. To the point where if there's only one pillow in the house, the master has to give it to his servant. And in fact, the rabbis in the Talmud actually say, from here we see that one who acquires a servant actually acquires a master. So that, given these interpretations, It is clear that the Torah wants to downplay the idea of this person being a slave. I want to now go back to our parsha, the opening verses. As I said, chapter 21 in Exodus, verses 2 through 6. We start out by saying, Ki tikne eved ivri, if you acquire a Hebrew servant, shesh shanim ya'avod, uvashvi'it yetzei lachofshi chinam. 6 years he shall work, and in the seventh year he will go out freely. Rashi, again, based on rabbinic sources, says, our section is not talking about a Hebrew servant who has sold himself due to poverty. Our section is talking about someone who's been sold by the court as a result of theft. And Rashi goes on to quote a later verse in our parsha from chapter 22, sentence verse 2, which is speaking in a context of someone who breaks into another one's house. And it says in that verse, he should pay back whatever he stole, but im ein lo, if he does not have what to pay back, v'nimkar b'gnevato, then he shall be sold for that which he stole in order to pay back. And therefore, the rabbis understand that our section is dealing with a different type of Eved Ivri. And it's an Eved Ivri, a Hebrew slave, who sold as a result of theft, where he has been unable to pay it back. And then the law of this person is 6 years he will work, and in the seventh year he goes out. Let me note that the rabbis understand that when one sells himself due to poverty, there is no law of 6 years. The term, the period of enslavement, is whatever the two parties agree to. Hypothetically, he could work for 20 years, for 30 years. The only qualification is that whenever the Jubilee year comes out, he has to go out. But one who was sold by the court, maximally, can only work for 6 years. The rabbis, furthermore, understand that all of the laws which apply to the Hebrew slave who was sold by, who sells himself, apply equally to the Hebrew slave who was sold by the court, which means the one who was sold by the court can also not be sold as a slave. He cannot be worked as a slave. He cannot be worked harshly. And he too goes out in the Jubilee year. So what makes the one who is sold different? There's one law which sets him apart, besides the period of 6 years which he works, and that is verse 4, chapter 21, verse 4 by us. Im Adonav yiten lo isha, if his master will give him a woman, v'yalda lo vanim ovanot, and she bears to him sons or daughters, ha'isha v'iladeha tiel adoneha, v'hu yetze v'gapo. The woman and the children shall be to the master, and he shall go out alone. This verse, according to the rabbinic understanding, and here again, I am now relying on Rashi as he quotes the rabbis. In verse 4, Rashi says, from here we see that the master has the right to give this Hebrew slave a non-Jewish female slave in order to produce babies who, as it says in verse 5, will become the slaves of the master. And I want to point out that it's with respect to this law, this is the only detail in which a Hebrew slave is now being treated as a slave. because he's now being put in a situation which could be seen as humiliating, as degrading, as having taken away his personal autonomy, because he is being given a woman to have relations with, who is basically a breeder, where there is no real personal relationship that exists over here. The only relationship is to be able to have sexual relations, and where the children, it says explicitly, will not be his children, but will be the children of the masters. And in that sense, he is being treated as a slave. It is interesting to note, and Rashi quotes this on verse 3, that this law only applies if the Hebrew slave is married. If he's single, the owner does not have the right to do that to him. In a case where the Hebrew slave is married, according to the halakha, according to the rabbinic understanding, the owner is obligated to now take his wife, and if he has children, his children, into his home to feed and clothe and give lodging to the slave's wife and children. The owner has no right to ask the wife and children to reciprocate in any way, to do any type of work for him. The only reciprocity which the owner has is this allowance to now thrust this Canaanite slave upon him in order to produce babies who will be the owner's slaves. And then we're told in verse 5, what happens, and I will insert, at the end of the 6 years when the Hebrew slave is supposed to go out. If the Hebrew slave says, I love my master, I love my wife, I love my children, I don't want to go free. We're told in the next verse, then the master shall bring him before God, which the rabbis interpret to mean before the court. And he will bring him to the door or to the doorposts. And then the master will pierce his ear with an awl, and he will be a slave forever. This is a special situation which is known as Eved Nirtza, the slave with the pierced ear. And let me note once again, this law applies only to the slave who was sold as a result of theft. The one who sells himself can never have his ear pierced. And there's a very good reason for that. Because the motivation for this situation is that the slave says, I love my master, I love my wife, I love my children. But when he says, I love my wife and I love my children, who is he referring to? He's not referring to his actual wife and children. He's referring to this Canaanite slave who was given to him to be a breeder. He's referring to the children who are, we are told in the text, are not really his children, but belong to the master. And all of that can only happen with the one who is sold by theft. It cannot apply to the one who sells himself. And as we mentioned, such a person can actually remain, but he has his ear pierced. I would now like to examine why our parsha actually begins with this section, and altogether the Jewish attitude towards Hebrew slaves. From the section which speaks about the one who sells himself due to impoverishment, it is very clear that the Torah does not want to encourage the institution of a Hebrew slave. And perhaps I should even add, encourage the concept of slavery, period. It sees The situation is being, as I said, a last resort. And in that section, the Torah goes out of its way to emphasize, in no way should this person be treated as a slave. He's a worker. And the reason is because the Torah is not happy with the institution of slavery. We've spoken about this in previous weeks. The Torah is very much interested in accentuating human dignity, in accentuating a sense of responsibility, accountability. The Torah does not want to encourage a situation of somebody who is impoverished, who then says, I want to give up my autonomy, I want to give up my dignity, I want to now have somebody else take care of all my needs. Rather, the Torah would like to have people who are on their own two feet, who are empowered. And therefore, the Torah does everything to emphasize, you're not a slave. Maintain your dignity. You're a worker. Realize that this is a temporary situation. You must go out. And that way of looking at things, that perspective, is also true in our parsha. When it talks about the one who was sold as a result of theft, who is not able to pay back. But in our parsha, there is this one allowance which really emphasizes the element of slavery, the Shivcha Kna'anit, the Canaanite slave who was given to him to be a breeder. And what I'd like to really focus on is this idea of the Eved Nirtza, the one whose ear is pierced. Why is his ear pierced? Because when the time comes for him to go out, he says, I love my master, I love my wife, I love my children. And the rabbis comment, why is his ear pierced? And again, you can find this in Rashi. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, the ear which heard on Mount Sinai, do not steal. And he went and he stole. Let it be pierced. The ear that heard, okay, I am the Lord your God, and went and acquired another master. Let his ear be pierced. And what are the rabbis trying to say with that? For this slave to say, I love my master, there's a confusion over here. He should not have a master. The only master that he should have is God. For this person to say, I love my wife, but she's not really your wife. I love my children, but they're not really your children. Why do you love them? And here we come to a theme which I've been trying to develop over the past few weeks. The reason why he loves these people is because they make his life easy. Because they give him all the benefits without the responsibilities. His master provides him with, as we said, food, clothing, lodging. He provides him with a structure. He doesn't have to think for himself. He doesn't have to work for himself. He's provided with a woman who he can have relations with. But he doesn't have any responsibilities towards that woman. He doesn't have to worry about having to clothe her and feed her. He can have the benefits without the responsibilities. The children. The children, he can also have the benefits of those children, but he doesn't have to be really worried about them. He doesn't have to provide for them. So that when he says, I love my master and my wife and my children, that is exhibiting a slave mentality. The Torah begins with our section, with this section, in Parshat Mishpatim, because it sees a slave mentality as being something which is not so atypical and something which has to be counteracted. We said the ear which heard do not steal and went ahead and stole. Why do people steal? Very often, it's because they don't have the means. Stealing is much easier than working. The payback is much quicker, much greater. Once again, it's the idea of somebody who wants to be able to get the payback now, who's not asking the question, but is what I'm doing responsible? How does it affect somebody else? How can I now benefit when I'm stealing somebody else's thing and hurting them? Perhaps I'll go back a second and say, when this Hebrew slave says, I love my wife, and who's the wife? The breeder. I love my children, the children who are not really his children. I said to you, based on Rashi, that this can only happen if he's already married. But what does it mean for him to say that he loves the woman who's not really his wife? But what about his real wife? Does he love her? If he really loved her, would he have brought her into this type of situation where she's now living in someone else's house, where another man who has no real relationship with her is now carrying out all of her real husband's responsibilities? Where because of what her husband has done, she now has another woman who comes into his life, who has an intimate relationship with him? How does she feel about it? Does the husband think about that? So that when you talk about the idea, I love you, but sometimes I love you, is a way of saying, but I don't love someone else. If I really love them, then maybe I wouldn't be so in love with you. And to come back to what I said a moment ago, maybe the problem over here is that he does not love the people that he has a responsibility towards. He loves the people who are giving him, and very clearly giving him who he's benefiting from. This is the dilemma of the Eved Ivri. And even in our situation, where he says, I want to stay here, and the Torah says, pierce his ear and he will be a slave forever. It's interesting that the rabbis say forever doesn't mean forever, but till the Jubilee year. And the way that I understand this is, from his perspective, the moment he says, pierce my ear, the moment he says, I want to stay, he has made himself a slave forever. He has perhaps given up on his human dignity and autonomy. And what the rabbis are saying, and according to tradition, this is the oral tradition accompanying the written law, as much as you want to give up your autonomy and dignity, you can't. Because in the end, you have to go out at the Jubilee year. As much as you want to enslave yourself, we'll let you do it up to a point. But then afterwards, you have to become a free man. Let me end by saying, nowadays, we do not have an institution known as the Hebrew slave. In fact, it's not only nowadays, but it would seem to be, based on rabbinic tradition, this has been inapplicable for the last 25 plus 100 years. Because in order for this law to be operative, you need to have the possibility of letting him go in the Jubilee year. But in order to observe the Jubilee year, you need to have the bulk of the Jewish population living in the land of Israel. We will talk about this at a later date in the podcast, when we get to the end of the book of Vayikra. The fact is, the Jubilee year, according to certain sources, has not been observed for the last 2,700 years since the 10 tribes were exiled. Because from that point on, the bulk of the Jewish population has not been living in the land of Israel. If that's the case, then why is this law relevant to us? And I think it's relevant to us because it raises a very basic question today in terms of employer-employee relations. And to what degree are employers careful to always keep straight that people who work for them are their employees, not their slaves? One place where this becomes a real issue has to do with job description. If I am hired to do a particular job, then the employer should have me do that job. But the employer can't come along and say to me, well, you're here from 9 to 5, and from 9 to 5, I can have you do whatever I want. The moment he says that, you become a slave. Sexual harassment. If I work for someone, that doesn't give them any rights over my body. That doesn't give them the right to say, oh, I'll be very happy to advance you, but I want to get reciprocated for that. The moment that happens, they become your slave. What about a situation of someone who has a job, who doesn't really like their job, doesn't feel fulfilled in their job? And maybe in the worst case scenario, feels that they have to engage in activities that very much compromise their dignity, their code of behavior, such as stealing, cheating, lying. If I want to get ahead in this job, I have to lie. I have to deceive. But if that's really what's happening, then you've become enslaved. And why are you doing this? Because it's a cushy job. Because I'm able to make a lot of money. So I think this is something which people have to think about. When I am now working for someone else, am I a worker or am I a slave? Does this job further my human dignity? Does it force me to compromise my human dignity? Both employee and employer need to always keep in perspective, I am not your slave, I only work for you. And as we've said on previous occasions, the only one that we should be enslaved to is God. And the reason for that is because being in that relationship with God empowers me, gives me greater human dignity. Unfortunately, being enslaved to a person inevitably demeans my dignity. Let us all try to remain autonomous and, as much as possible, highlight our human dignity. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Please tell your friends about this podcast series, and please let us know your thoughts and comments. Send us email via podcast@pardesusa.org. Thanks to Dr. David Bernstein, who is the executive producer of the Pardes from Jerusalem podcast series. Shalom and goodbye from Jerusalem.